Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. And we'll begin, as we usually do on Fridays, with our weekly Ask the Mayor segment in just a minute. But there's one thing I want to do first today, and that is to pay tribute to the New York City nurse who is now reported to be the first nurse to die from coronavirus. According to the New York Times, he is Caius Kelly, a 48-year-old assistant nurse manager at Mount Sinai West in Manhattan. His sister is quoted in the Times saying he had asthma. That would be a relevant underlying condition. But he was working, according to the Times, sometimes without protective equipment. It says colleagues complained on social media that they did not have enough protective clothing or masks. Kelly's sister says his death could have been prevented. So we pay tribute to, as far as we know, the first nurse on the front lines to die of coronavirus in New York. And we say out loud the issues raised by his death. And with that, we begin, as we usually do on Fridays, with our weekly Ask the Mayor segment, My Questions and Yours for Mayor Bill de Blasio at 212-433-WNYC. As our lines are open, 212-433-9692. Or you can tweet a question. Just use the hashtag Ask the Mayor. Now, callers, one word. We only have one person screening calls today. We usually have two or three in normal times, but we're trying to have as few people as possible go into the studios. So please understand if the screener is moving fast to let you go after a segment ends, or if we can't take your call within a segment. They're not being rude. It's the circumstance. There's a lot for one screener to do just to get enough calls ready to go on. So thanks very much in advance for understanding. And good morning, Mr. Mayor. Welcome back to WNYC.
Brian, I want to thank you for paying tribute to the nurse we've lost, because the healthcare workers are really going through such a tough time now, and we got to make sure, and I'm saying this to all the people who run hospitals and everyone who's in the middle of this fight, we've got to make sure that the supplies we have get to the frontline workers. We do have supplies in this city. We don't have endless, you know, we can get through this week and next week, but we have supplies. Got to make sure they get to the people doing the work. We have to protect them. So it's very, very painful. We've lost someone, and we got to make sure that everyone is protected.
Absolutely. I saw this stat tweeted by a Washington Post reporter. Tell me if you can confirm this, that on Wednesday in the city, there were 6,406 medical 911 calls. 6,406 in one day. And yes, that breaks the city record, which was set on September 11th, 2001. Is that where we are now?
Look, I know we've had a lot more volume. I cannot confirm that specific number. We can get that to you today. But what really matters is understanding there's a huge strain on our healthcare system and everything else that goes with it. Obviously, our EMTs and ambulances, our first responders in general. This is going to be a huge challenge. And you know, my job, I think, Brian, is to, you know, simultaneously remind people we will get through, because we will. You know, it'll be a rough few months, and then we're going to start to get better. But it's also to be honest that it's not going to be done. You know, we'd all like it to go away instantly. That's not going to happen. April's going to be really tough. I think May's going to be really tough. And we desperately need help from outside to get through these next 2 months.
And there's been so much attention on Elmhurst Hospital in Queens with that big Times article on the many deaths in one day. And Queens in general is having the most cases. Why Queens? Why Elmhurst Hospital?
Well, I think one of the most important things, and most people wouldn't think this way about it, but is just where hospitals are. And Queens, you know, has the two big public hospitals, but, you know, it's also a borough of 2.3 million people. So to some extent, this is a lot of people going to a few public hospitals, sort of disproportionate to what you might see in other boroughs. That's definitely part of it. You know, we're trying to always understand what's going on with this disease. We've never confronted it before. It is clearly widespread over all five boroughs. The differences are not that intense from borough to borough, really, when you come down to it. It's something we're facing everywhere. But it does not belittle what people are going through in Queens. It's obviously been really tough, particularly at Elmhurst Hospital. But I do think part of it is a very big community goes to Elmhurst specifically, whereas in, say, Manhattan or Brooklyn, people choose between more hospitals. The folks at Elmhurst are doing an amazing job. They're going through a really tough time, but it is an extraordinary hospital. It's a very, very strong hospital, very capable staff. We've been sending constantly more and more. Four times in the last 10 days, we've sent more ventilators. We sent 40 over yesterday. We sent 56 additional staff over yesterday. We're going to keep doing that. To help them through, but it's really tough, and we got to get some of these healthcare workers a break. They have been going through crazy hours. They're seeing a lot of death. Let's be blunt. I mean, you know, we're seeing every healthcare worker has to deal with death sometimes, but these poor folks have been seeing a lot in a very concentrated period of time. We got to give them a break and get some other folks over to, you know, spell them and give them a chance to recover from what they've gone through.
And we had a doctor write in yesterday. I used this on the air yesterday, but I'm going to use it again today. He's in Massachusetts, but says in general, in the hard-hit states, poor facilities that couldn't afford to stockpile personal protective equipment are experiencing severe shortages, while the workers at richer hospitals are better protected. Socioeconomic divide, he writes, doctors taking care of the poor being sacrificed. Can you say that that inequity is or is not the case at Elmhurst or other city hospitals here?
No, it's not the case in the city hospitals. I really feel strong. I've had this conversation with the CEO of our public hospitals, Dr. Mitch Katz, and constantly. And the example that 40 ventilators went yesterday to Elmhurst is one of many that, you know, they will get what they need. Now, we got to make sure, obviously, that everyone in the management of every hospital, public and private, gets everything that's been distributed to them to the healthcare workers who need it. And that, you know, making sure that once it comes in the building, it gets to who needs it and then is constantly resupplied. But we do have enough supplies in the city this week and to get into next week. After that, it gets really tough and I'm very, very worried. But I know we have them now. We got to make sure that fairness of that distribution happening the way it's supposed to happen keeps going on. But no, I can say for a fact, whenever our public hospitals have needed something, you know, it goes from the warehouse to them. I've been seeing it with my own eyes.
And I want to ask you, before we go to the phones, about the central issue of ventilators that we and you have been talking about every day, whether there will be enough for all the people whose lives could be saved by them in the hospitals. And I want to play a soundbite from a key member of the president's team that seems to take issue with the existence or extent of the potential shortage. Here is the president's top public health professional, Dr. Deborah Birx, who I gather is considered not a hack, but a real public health official with decades in global HIV leadership and appointed to her job by President Obama originally. Here is Dr. Birx at yesterday's White House briefing.
Certainly many hospitals talk about this on a daily basis, but to say that to the American people, to make the implication that when they need a hospital bed, it's not going to be there, or when they need that ventilator, it's not going to be there. We don't have an evidence of that right now. And it's our job collectively to assure the American people that it's our collective job to make sure that doesn't happen. Right now, you can see these cases are concentrated in highly urban areas. There are other parts of the states that have lots of ventilators and other parts of New York State that don't have any infections right now. So we can be creative. We can meet the need by being responsive.
Do you have a response to that?
Look, Dr. Birx, who I've spoken to, I want to say, in general, we obviously need her as one of the leaders of this fight, and Dr. Fauci, you know, who is a New Yorker who's doing amazing work. I appreciate their overall effort. I think the way she's saying it is not entirely fair, and I'll tell you why. It's one thing to say, hey, if within a single state, some place needs a lot of ventilators, other place doesn't need many ventilators, shift them around. Okay, that's fair. But the problem is her assessment misses just the shocking growth pattern that, you know, we've seen it in the city, obviously, where, you know, somewhere between a quarter and a third of all the cases in the nation right now. But if you look in the suburbs, I mean, that first horrible shock we had in Westchester County, there's a lot of cases in Westchester, Nassau, and Suffolk right now. And this is just the beginning. So I don't know how she says, you know, there's not evidence. There's tons of evidence. Look, it's not just Elmhurst. It's happening in a number of hospitals in this city that the number of cases is shooting upward, and that means a huge pressure not on the medical, only on the medical staff, but on the need for ventilators. So I think maybe what she said might be true some places. It sure as hell is not the whole truth here.
And as you urged the president to invoke the Defense Production Act to order companies to produce ventilators and personal protective equipment like masks so we get more faster, the president yesterday said this.
For the most part, the companies, we don't need it. We say we need this, and they say, don't bother, we're going to do it. I mean, we're dealing with Ford, General Motors, 3M. We're dealing with great companies. They want to do this. They want to do this. They're doing things that frankly, they don't need somebody to walk over there with a hammer and say, do it. They are getting it done.
Can you react to that idea that the private sector is doing it voluntarily?
Look, I've had this conversation with the president directly, and I can at least understand. I'm going to be respectful because we need him to actually produce for New York City right now. So I'll be respectful. But I also want to say that I understand some of this is just plain philosophical, ideological. You know, he believes the private sector is the solution to everything. I believe right now the private sector can play a crucial role, and a lot of companies are stepping up. But they are not stepping up to the degree we need them to in many cases, nor is it coordinated to ensure that what needs to be produced is produced on the most aggressive schedule and then distributed where it has to be. Nor is the military has the military been brought in the way they need to be to ensure that those key supplies and equipment get where they need to get in the nation as quickly as humanly possible. The only force that can do that is the military. And we also need their medical personnel that they have a huge number of. There's something broken here because the country is really not being organized to fight this war. I mean, that's just the truth. You can't say, hey, that's a great company and they're producing a lot of stuff and think that's the end of the discussion. Is the stuff getting where it needs to be? You know, is it being produced at the highest possible level? What happens when that supply runs out? Those are the basic questions you would ask in a war, and they're just not being asked now. That's just the fundamental truth.
All right. The first caller I want to take from you is Andy in Upper Manhattan, and I think, based on something I read just before you came on, that you might have some good news for him. Andy in Upper Manhattan, you're on WNYC with Mayor de Blasio. Good morning.
Good morning, Brian. Good morning, Mr. Mayor. How you doing?
Good, Andy. How you feel?
I'm good, thank you. I'm in good shape. I'm in my 40s. I'm not so afraid of getting sick. I'm trying to be safe, and I'm not doing anything stupid, but I live with my mother-in-law, and I have a very young child, and I'm much more worried about them. Why this is such a real emergency, am I going to work every day without protective equipment on luxury high-rises? I hadn't seen my boss in 3 weeks. We're sharing a porta potty. We're crammed into the man lift. We're given no protective equipment. And I'm afraid I'm going to get sick and bring it home.
You're a construction worker building luxury buildings. Is that it?
Yeah. I got to just say, we are not saving lives.
Mr. Mayor, I think
what
we
I
have.
Do, and I get paid well, but we are not essential workers.
Right. Andy, I agree with you. And the news that Brian was referring to. So, we've been talking, the governor's team, my team, about how to address this issue. I think you're exactly right. And the governor just announced, based on what was absolute agreement between New York City and New York State, that non-essential construction will end. Anything that is not directly part of the essential work of fighting coronavirus and the essential work of keeping the city running and the state running, any construction that's not about the public good is going to end. So luxury condos will not be built until this is over. Office buildings are not going to be built. So that work's going to end immediately. We need to protect people. I think you're right. This was one of the pieces that wasn't being addressed. And, you know, in the rush of things, you understand some things get missed in the first instance. But thank you for sounding the alarm. Other people have too. And as of this morning, that non-essential construction is being canceled.
What took so long on this one? People have been calling us for over a week. Jermoni Williams was on, I think, Thursday last week, saying this was outrageous as other things were being shut down. What took so long on this one?
Well, Brian, I want to be fair, and I know the governor and his team were dealing with the same challenge. You know, a week ago, it was not at all clear the stimulus bill was going to happen. In fact, you'll remember it sort of seemed to be coming together and then fell apart many times. And I think we're all grappling with, all of us in public service are grappling with the fact that people are just losing their income so deeply that there's fundamental problems like affording food, affording medicine. You know, it's, we're trying to deal with this immediate crisis, but if people are getting impoverished, there's another crisis that gets created. So I think there was a real hesitation to take away work that might still be allowable because it was outdoor work, which is just fundamentally different in terms of this disease and how it functions than indoor. But now that the stimulus is there, to me, certainly that was a real part of feeling better about canceling all this non-essential construction, knowing that people at least would have some kind of support. And obviously, we have to take every step for safety. So I think there was a legitimate, because it was outdoors, because it wasn't clear if people were going to get any kind of real safety net from the federal government, there was hesitation. But now it's absolutely time to do it.
Tulis in Harlem, you're on WNYC with the mayor. Hello, Tulis.
Hello, Brian. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Mr. Mayor, I wonder if there's any plans to issue tickets to people who are congregating in the parks, you know, too close to each other. There's no social distancing. I live right across the street from St. Nicholas Park, and there were about 15 or 20 people there yesterday. So I called the 26th precinct, and the officer on the desk said he couldn't do anything.
Well, Tulis, I'm really sorry you had that experience, and I'm going to talk to the police commissioner to make sure that the commanding officer at the 26th precinct understands that all the men and women under his command can never say they can't do anything. Or, you know, the NYPD is supposed to serve people of the city in every situation. And I need you to give your information to WNYC so we can follow up about exactly who you talked to so we could fix that situation. I want people to call 311, not their precinct. So this is what I want to say to all New Yorkers. Call 311 if you see people hanging out in the park, congregating. Call 311 if you see a grocery store that's too full, if you see a line outside a pharmacy that people are like a normal line instead of everyone 6 feet apart from each other. Call 311. That will lead to NYPD being alerted or Parks Department or Fire Department, whoever's got people nearest to come over and break it up. To your question about summonses, look, right now we're not doing summonses. We're trying to educate and warn and break things up and move people along and get them used to a new reality. If we have to get a lot tougher in terms of penalties, we can do that. But the goal right now is to try to get people to understand how serious this is and show them consistent enforcement. I do think people are learning more every day. This thing's getting tougher and tougher. They're getting educated constantly by the media. But, you know, the next step, of course, would be to up the ante and bring penalties into play if we have to do that. And that may just be days away if we don't see people handle it better.
And I've seen myself and heard complaints from others about people outside seemingly oblivious to the courtesy of 6 feet as they pass on the street. I've also seen some complaints online about runners who run closely past people, assuming that the 6 feet doesn't matter or because they're moving by, but they're breathing relatively hard, presumably, as they expend that energy. Part of Italy shut down running and biking. Could either of those things become necessary here?
Look, I think we've got to be, I continue to believe and have this conversation all the time with our public health folks, that there is a balance that has to be struck. This is going to be, I think, April and May. All right, now that's my best projection. I don't think it's realistic to say to 8.6 million people you can't get any exercise for 2 months. We got to think about people's health overall. This is, you know, coronavirus is a massive challenge, but you know, there's lots of other health challenges, and telling people I can't get any exercise is actually going to be dangerous to a lot of people's health on many other levels. I do think you're right to say everyone's got to intensify their efforts to keep that distance. Now, I've been in many, many parts of the city the last few days that look like a ghost town. So clearly, because of the rules that the state put together, which we agree with fully, there's a huge number of people home. You know, schools are shut down. All sorts of everything, entertainment, recreation is shut down. So I think it's fair to say in a lot of the city, there's very, very little activity compared to what used to be. And a lot of people observing the rules. There's definitely some people who need, you know, to be corrected and enforced in different ways. And educated. It's not the norm for what I'm saying. The norm is people taking this very seriously. And I think, you know, the goal right now is just constantly remind people, if you go outside, it's for as little time as you possibly can. Get to the grocery store, get to the pharmacy. If you need some exercise, go get it, but then go back home. And, you know, everyone's got to be a part. This is another case, Brian. The government cannot do this all alone. Over the perfect conditions, the government cannot do this all alone. People have to be vocal. If someone's not keeping distance, you first of all create the distance yourself, but remind people. And we've all got to have that conversation with each other. It has to be an element of personal responsibility for us to get through a crisis this big.
Listener asks on Twitter, why are so few streets being closed? There are more street closures on a typical summer weekend for street fairs. And for the context for that, I see that you're closing four streets to cars for 4 days. To cut down on density in parks. So why not more than that?
Because of the challenge of enforcement. If you shut down streets, you know, the optimized view of this is, oh, you shut down streets and, you know, people have a new place to go and they spread out, and that's great, and that would be wonderful. But the flip of that is you create a new place for people to congregate, but it doesn't have enforcement, unlike, you know, parks and defined areas where we know we have to enforce. So what we've done, working with the city council, is define a small group of streets to begin, added enforcement to them. And remember, every time you have to go enforce something else, you're stretching your resources. And if it works well, we can keep adding to it. But what I'd hate to see is we think we're solving a problem and we create a brand new problem of a place for people to hang out that doesn't have a police officer or a parks officer or someone to keep people separated.
Alice in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with Mayor de Blasio. Hi, Alice.
Yes, hello. My name's Alice. I teach at an elite college in New York City, and there are a lot of Chinese students there, and one of my Chinese students, her mother actually in China owns a number of factories that produce masks and protective gear, and because her daughter lives in New York, she wants to donate tens of thousands of these things to us, but there are, not surprisingly, a lot of hurdles. For instance, the problems between the Chinese and American governments and trade and all sorts of things. So asking for your help to get these donations.
She also knows
other people in China who are producing the N95 masks that might very well be willing to sell them to New York at production cost, which is below wholesale cost.
Mr. Mayor. Cheap.
Thank you. Alice, will you please give your information to WNYC? We're going to have our team follow up with you today. What this whole crisis has pointed out is that the American people are bluntly at the mercy of foreign producers when it comes to medical equipment and supplies. And this is a situation that has to be fixed going forward. This is not the last global health challenge we're going to see. It's really, really striking that globalization has created a new dependency that's very, very dangerous. And we used to talk about energy independence. Healthcare independence is actually crucially important. We're going to have to really rework this and rebuild an industry in this country that can produce these things. Just like these amazing workers out of nowhere at the Brooklyn Navy Yard. And Brian, really want to urge your listeners to go to my Twitter feed at NYC Mayor and see this video of these folks at the Brooklyn Navy Yard who created their own factory from scratch, hand-producing face shields to protect healthcare workers and first responders. I mean, literally made by hand. They're going to have 120,000 ready by next week. Because there is no industry here doing that, that we can get a supply enough from. But to Alice's point, we'll have someone follow up with her today. We are finding some foreign suppliers that we can get through that maze that Alice is describing and get some of that here. But the problem is, unless it's someone donating, like the person that Alice has talked about, you know, we're being outbid by other places in the country and other places in the world, and then we up our bids and get outbid again. It's become crazy. The private market is not functioning right now for all these supplies. That's part of why we need the federal government so badly to step in. But we want whatever Alice's friend has. We want to get that here as quickly as possible. Our team will work on that today.
Alice, hang on. We'll take your contact information. We did have success the other day, Mr. Mayor, when somebody like Alice called in and said his father had 4 ventilators. And Brooklyn Hospital got in touch with us, just hearing that on the air, and we heard that they did make an arrangement to transfer those 4 ventilators. So, listeners,
that makes
you can,
a huge difference. 4 ventilators saves a lot of lives. That's really good news.
That's 4 times however many people use them over time. I see that obviously the schools are closed, but you opened the places called regional enrichment centers for children of essential workers. I see you're now expanding eligibility to grocery store and pharmacy workers' kids, as well as the already included healthcare workers' kids and others. How far should this go? Should postal workers and FedEx and UPS workers in the new delivery economy, their children be eligible, you know, with their parents essential? What should this include?
It's something we're looking at all the time and, you know, willing to expand when we can assure people that we will have, you know, a space for their child. I want to be careful about, you know, if we're going to make a promise, we have to be able to keep it. So right now what we're finding is there's been a lot of interest, but not a lot of kids actually showing up. And I think, you know, there's a lot going on here, obviously, and families are in flux. And a lot of family members are home, and I think what's happening is that because there's such a massive number of people home, it probably has changed the minds of some essential workers that they do have some other options for their kids they might not have had even a week ago. But, yeah, right now we're not seeing the take-up on it that we would have expected. So long as we know we will have space, we are open to expanding further.
Yes.
I think we need to give it a few more days to really see what's going on before we can make a decision. But postal workers are a great example.
If kids aren't going, I wonder if it's maybe because the parents don't trust that the people running the centers can really keep the kids 6 feet apart. How much can you guarantee that they can?
Look, Ed, first of all, I think there's a lot of concern and fear and confusion out there. And the central question, I know it as a parent, the first question is always going to be, is your child safe? And then, obviously, parents will want to make sure the child is doing something constructive. The folks running these centers are very devoted to making sure that they're handled safely. And, in fact, because there's not a lot of kids in them right now, there's certainly plenty of room. I'm sure parents are worried about that. They're there for essential workers. So here's what it comes down to. So long as the essential worker, they've got a better arrangement, that's fine. We just need to support them to make sure they can show up in doing the life-saving work they're doing. If they don't have another arrangement, they can depend on these centers as a place where clearly social distancing is being practiced. There's a medical, you know, school nurse there. It's obviously all about protecting the kids so the essential workers can get to work. And I think if there's anyone who needs that, if they need that for their child, call 311. We'll give you the right location. They can obviously come take a look for themselves to be satisfied. But the most important thing is protecting the kids and making sure that worker can get to work.
You were talking even this week about the possibility of schools reopening this term. Officially, they're only closed through April 20th as of now. Do you want to announce that they'll have to remain closed for the semester?
It's not time for that, Brian. I couldn't have been blunter. I mean, you know, I hated closing the schools. I thought it was going to cause all sorts of other problems, and of course it has. But I said our first attempt will be April 20 because that's right the Monday after the spring vacation that was already in place for the schools. That's a real tough goal right now, but when we get closer is the right time to make that final decision.
And that tension between the public health threat and the economic and family pain in other ways, you know, President Trump is getting a lot of flack now for wanting to try to reopen sooner than later, maybe in some low-virus counties. But as you just indicated, you were reluctant at first to cancel schools and Broadway and the St. Patrick's Day parade because of the economic pain. Was that balance a learning curve for you?
I think the whole godforsaken experience has been a learning curve. None of us have ever been through anything like this. The only possible comparison is what the country went through in the Depression and World War II. And, you know, my parents happened to have gone through that. They had me late in life, and, you know, I got a lot of lessons from them. But nothing, I think, could prepare any of us for the speed. And this thing has been so fast, you know, from, I mean, March 1st, I think it was, we had one case. You know, it's just breathtaking. So what I think we're learning in real time, and that's what matters, because right now the only thing I'm thinking about is how do we get through this week, how do we get through next week? After next week, I get very, very worried. But my focus is literally how do we get through the immediate challenge. And then, you know, when we're sure this crisis is over, we all have to assess what it means for the future. But right now, it's we got to survive.
Do you think reopening the economy in counties far from New York that aren't hard hit would be a threat to New York?
I don't think it's about a threat to New York. I think it's a threat to the people in those counties, and it's a threat to their states. I think there is a kind of willful ignorance going on. You look at what has happened with this disease all over the world, it's pretty clear the way it spreads. If you start to open up new avenues for it to spread again, because if you quote-unquote reopen the economy, what does that mean? People travel, they go to meetings, you know, there's all the things that will just exacerbate the spread. So you take a place that right now doesn't have much, thank God, and you then guarantee it will start to have its own epidemic.
One more call.
A lot of places don't have a lot of health care on top of that, you know, which means they'll be hit even harder.
One more call before we run out of time. Allison in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with the mayor. Hello, Allison.
Hi. Oh, my God. I'm a little nervous. First of all, I have to say, I can imagine running this wonderful city, of which I am a native, in this time, and I think you're doing a great job. Excuse my trembling voice.
I also loved how you addressed journalists.
I'm sorry, it's hard to. But the journalist yesterday at your briefing, I think you're pragmatic. I think you're giving us the facts. I love how you have your little book next to you. I think you're fabulous. So, with that said, I'm a neighbor of yours. I'm on the Upper East Side. Co-op boards. At least mine and some others, I'm on Facebook pages, seem to be, you know, putting down restrictions, who can visit, who can come in, who cannot come in. What is their jurisdiction? I'm a little offended at some of the choices. Some people have to use the service/garbage elevator. I mean, it's kind of a age-old problem with some co-ops. I'm not a Park Avenue co-op. It shouldn't really matter where you are.
And Allison, forgive me for jumping in, but our time is running so short. Let me get a response to you from the mayor about the jurisdiction of co-op boards to restrict who comes in, professional services or even friends, I've seen in some cases, of residents.
Yeah. Allison,
and relatives of residents.
It's a really good question. Allison, thank you for your kind statement. I really appreciate that personally. And please give your information to WNYC because this is a good one. I'm going to actually get a bigger answer on this and tell the people of the city because Allison asked a question I'm sure lots of people are asking. So I need to get a firm answer on the legal reality on how we avoid discrimination because I think Allison is pointing out that we cannot in this crisis allow people to fall back on the kind of, you know, discriminatory thoughts that often used to pervade who gets to use one elevator, who gets to use another. We got to be really smart and careful about that. But if Allison, give your information to WNYC, we'll follow up with you. And Brian, I pledge that I will get a bigger answer and give it to you and the people of the city.
I know we're a couple of minutes over time. Can I sneak in one more from somebody who I think has a situation that deserves to be aired?
Yep.
Tracy in Woodhaven. You're on WNYC with the mayor. Hi, Tracy.
Hi, good morning, Brian. Good morning, Mayor. I'm calling because I am a healthcare worker, but not one that is often mentioned. I work in a group home with developmentally disabled adults. I work for an agency. And we're on the front lines, and like any other place, we're having so much trouble getting supplies, even things like toilet paper. Our vendors are out. We can't get hand sanitizer. We can't get Lysol. How can this, I mean, the economics of this is incredible, but is there a way that the city can help agencies like ours? Because, again, you have eight people living in a house and one of them is now positive.
Right.
How do you quarantine? People share bedrooms. I mean, it's really a concern.
Mr. Mayor, how about for these, and many of these are city-linked, as you know, the group homes for developmentally disabled adults?
Sure. Tracy, thank you. This is also a really important topic that we need to get clear answers and guidance out. Please give your information to WNYC. We can at least immediately get you some help. And we need to get a bigger answer, because I think what we're finding this whole crisis is, you know, the state started with the big strokes, and now, you know, we're starting to see all these things that have not yet been answered, not yet been accounted for, and we have to catch up while trying to manage this crisis. So I'm really glad you called, because the last thing we want to do is forget these folks, you know, your residents who have so many challenges, but also the people doing the work like you who are doing really noble work. We have to support you and get you supplies as well. So my folks at Department of Health will be following up, and we'll make sure we get you supplies. Please give your information to WNYC.
Mr. Mayor, thanks as always. Hang in there. Talk to you next week.
Thank you. You too, Brian. Take care.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Senator Gillibrand next. Stay with us.